recording in progress.
Hey guys, welcome back to the B-List. I'm B, as you know. I am joined by a very special guest today. This is not going to be like a normal episode. This is a kind of an unconventional episode in a way, because this is someone I have known for a very long time, but we kind of haven't talked in many years. Social media kind of reconnected us, as it does. People usually say like social media can be a hellscape. I think that if you feel that way, you're probably using it wrong. I feel like the algorithm is essentially a mirror. So like, I just always feel like good things. What I'm saying is that I feel like so many good things have come in my life through social media and reconnecting with people like my guest, Gigi Bob. Well, I know you as Gigi Bobby, but is it Evans now? Or is it?
Evans, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We've known
each other
for so long.
I couldn't agree more, by the way. I was so excited to get a message from you. It was so heartwarming to reconnect. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just really excited to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you today because like I said, we have known each other a very long time. And a lot of my New York experience was kind of like, you were there for those first, and which is like so crazy. And to give you guys background, Gigi, where I worked with Gigi at, I don't talk a lot about this on social media as well. I think I randomly mentioned it recently because the American Apparel documentary came out, right? It's on Netflix. It's called Trainwreck, The Cult of American Apparel. It is truly a cult, and we're going to talk about that. I don't usually talk about stuff like that because it was such a long period of my life. I worked there for a decade, and we were pretty high up, and we were very much in the eye of the hurricane for a lot of that, good or bad, all of it. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. But I learned so much. But I'm excited to talk to you about that because, you know, the people were sending me the documentary trailer and stuff like that. And to me personally, and it was so crazy a time. And I don't want to revisit it. And also, there's nothing I could watch in that documentary that I have not lived through and worse. Like, there's nothing that you could tell me that would be worse than what I personally experienced. But there's also good things. I'm like a eternal optimist. And I think you kind of are too, in a way. So we'll talk about that. But yeah, I just want to give you guys background. But yeah, so people were sending me the documentary. And then I caught your social media posts about it because you were putting up story, or was it on the feed? You put it on the feed. And I saw you talking about it. And then I reached out to you and I just wrote this long message. And I was just like, you know, honestly, because I think when we split, like you left, stopped working there. And I think it was just kind of like, I think it's like a relationship sometimes, right? You just kind of have to cut off everybody just to like completely, you know what I mean? So I hadn't talked to you in forever, but we just kind of reconnected over the documentary. And I said, let's just do this on the podcast. So here we are. So anyways, I'll stop talking and you can, yeah.
Well, so
how's
yeah,
life been?
I did watch the documentary.
Yeah.
You're right. There was nothing in it that was surprising to me or new to me in any way. But I will tell you this. I have been deep in the weeds of the cult documentary scene since 2020 when I first watched a series on HBO called The Vow.
Okay.
And the reason why it was interesting to me initially is because it was a personal development program, very similar to one that I had gone through. And so I could see the point at which it goes from being just a community of people who really enjoy being together and are on a similar mission to it becoming toxic, to it becoming really controlling of people's time and energy and relationships, and then how it ends up kind of falling all the way off the cliff into what became a sex cult. So that was that was truly like a trafficking ring. It was horrendous. It's a horrendous story.
To be clear, you're talking about The Vow.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
About the NXIVM cult.
Okay, I've heard of this.
Which is very well known now, and there various whistleblowers from the cult have created their own podcasts, which I have listened to. And mostly, I just wanted to understand how that all works, how it all ties in, And then kind of layering my own understanding of culture and pop culture, social media, and just the collective consciousness as a whole, and how things like this, NXIVM, American Apparel, all of it has it's a breeding ground for these types of situations. Because one of the things that people were expressing in the documentary is, oh my gosh, we worked so much. It was just
I think that,
egregious,
well,
you know.
to back up just so people can understand the nature of our work, right? So I started very much at the very beginning of the retail and, American Pro when it opened stores. And I started, I think, the 24th store. Oh, a dog. Love it. And I moved, I was traveling around. I met Dove, the former CEO, early on. And I think that, what year was that? I don't even want to age myself, but I met him very early on. And I started opening stores for the company and traveling around. And I think I even, you started in Savannah. I started in Boston. I worked there and I was traveling around and I was opening stores. And then eventually I moved to New York. But there was already someone running the entire visuals department to give you guys clarity. We were, Zhuji and I were both visual merchandisers, and I was also a graphics person at the time as well. I eventually, by the time I left, I was the visual district manager for all of the Northeast. I was doing New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts. Not me. I mean, I was managing the team. So it was like 76 people at some point. It was insane. So, but I was young and I was given a lot of responsibility. I had a company car. I was traveling. I went to Europe and opened stores. I was doing the whole thing. And I learned so much and had so much. It's weird because like I still wouldn't take any of it back because I learned so much at such an early age and had so much responsibility. But I also came with a lot of really bad things. I was getting 4 a.m. phone calls from the CEO. I was called all kinds of slurs. Guys, I won't even repeat them here, but I've seen everything. If you, Zhuji's holding her dog right now, which is
My
so cute. If you remember,
emotional support dog.
right? Well, my emotional support dog, you remember Stevie? Stevie, she passed away 2 years ago, but she had a long life. I mean, she was 20 years old. Fucking dog, because she had seen everything. She had stayed in Dove's mansion and in Echo Park. Because I remember I used to go visit and I would stay in the company apartment, and the landlord there wouldn't allow pets after a while. Like I think he just said, oh, it's fine. And then after about a couple of weeks staying there, the landlord was like, you can't have a pet in this building. So Dove's like, just put her in my house. And I would like come visit her every other day, and there's girls like on roller skates smoking weed and dog droppings everywhere and other dogs running around. And I was like, we got to get out of here, Stevie. But anyways, that's a lot. But then I when I moved to New York right away, I think I met you. I think we moved to New York probably around the same time. And we were in the trenches together. Zhuji was a colorful character. I was too. We were both color. We were very kooky, both of us. But we had so much fun working together. I mean, like, we didn't take stuff too seriously, but we did. You know what I mean? But I feel like you and I, like everybody else, for lack of a better, we're like, and it's like kind of like the Romy and Michelle thing, where it's like we were thought we were cool, but we were probably from the outside. Like we did not fit in at American Apparel. I don't think we did, but we found each other. You know what I mean? So it made it like, I could do this.
Well, and also, I just one of
And
the
we were.
things that I remember very distinctly about you
Do you
is
remember when we met? Do you remember where?
so I think it must have been a year after I moved to New York, because that's when I started being on the visual team, and we did overnights all the time.
Yeah, we
So
were always just working.
it was the middle of the night, you know. If we were being kooky, it was probably because we were like,
But we were young too. So like, if we weren't up at an overnight, we were probably up all night at some bar. It was New York. We were like, also to paint the picture, guys, this is the early, 2010s. Yeah, it was a
let's
little bit
pretend
before
like that's true.
that. But like, it was recession era too. So young people were just work, regardless of where you worked, you were working. all the time. It was a different environment. I think just the culture was different. I think people look at working differently. And we enjoyed it because it was just like, what else are we doing? You know?
Exactly. Plus, like, we survived on overtime. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it
But
wasn't.
we were paid, like compared to everybody else that I knew working, like we had like nice lives. Like, I mean, I think that can like yeah, I think that things have just shifted a lot. But sorry, I got kind of off track, but
No, it's okay.
I don't
I
remember where
just
we met. I don't.
because we were doing overnights all the time and it was such a tight-knit team, we got to know each other really well. And I just remember having kind of a rule that I should not be drinking liquids around you because I was gonna have a spit take.
Yeah.
It was just gonna come out my nose because out of nowhere you would just say some off-the-wall hilarious thing and we would all be dying laughing.
Yeah.
And it would usually center around something that was going on around us. So you were always able to make light of things that were either kind of difficult for us because, we didn't have a lot of direction.
No, I know, but we were pretty like good on our own. We just kind of learned things on our own. And thank God we didn't have direction all the time because I would have been driven fucking insane. Could you imagine if Duff had lived in New York? It's like oh my fucking God. You never.
Part-time. He was part-time there.
Did you ever get along with Duff? Did you ever have moments with him that you, or did you always just kind of not really? I remember you would like kind of hide from him, like most people. You would be like, oh God, he's coming. Like you would hear that he was coming to a store or somewhere, and you'd be like, oh God, I'm leaving, which is
Well,
smart.
I don't know if you have the same experience, but if you early on in your interactions with him became associated with someone,
Yeah.
it was difficult for that association to kind of rub
Rub
off.
off. Okay.
And so when I first met him, I was the assistant manager, not visual manager, but manager of
Right,
the
okay.
store on the Upper West Side. And the manager had disappointed him many, many times. She just didn't follow direction well. She wasn't taking her job seriously. And because she was rarely at the store, every time he came in and was disappointed by
He
something,
would think of
I
you
was
because he would
the
just remember your name, Juji.
face
Juji, get out of here. Give me the one with the hair and the rat
of
tail.
it. So again, I was like getting a secondhand bad rap about
Yeah.
things that, assistant managers aren't included on all the emails. They're not privy to a lot of information of what the priorities are, but the manager is, and she wasn't handing that down to me or delegating it to anybody. So really, when he walked in and he was upset about something, I would be the one just standing there going, okay, well, I'm not throwing this girl under the bus. That's not my style. But also,
But he
he knows
created,
that.
he knows that that's kind of his MO to give you guys kind of an idea of what it was like working for Duff. He's a colorful character, to say the least. I met him actually when I had only started working at American Apparel for 3 weeks or so. And it was really early. I had just graduated college and literally. And I was a graphics person. And I remember he would have these girlfriends. He had many girlfriends. He probably still does. And he is actually like a very charismatic character. Like I can understand why girls would. He's that funny guy. You know what I mean? And when he dotes on somebody, he really focuses on them, makes them feel very special. It's a total thing. But I remember he would have these girlfriends and they would travel all around the US and they would just randomly show up at different locations. And one day, his first girlfriend showed up at the store that I was working at. And I guess everybody else there had no really idea what was going on. And I was measuring for graphics and doing some mock-up of for graphic space or something. And she goes, "You, what's your name?" And I was like, B, because it's never B. And then she was like, and she was talking to me. And after 5 minutes, she's like, "You're interesting. You should meet Dove. He'd like you." And I was like, "Okay, cool. I'd love to meet him someday." She's like, "No, tonight." And I was like, "Okay." I was like, "Where?" She's like, "New York." So we got in a car that night and drove from Boston to New York. and went to his Lower East Side apartment, which was located above the store there around that corner. And we walk into his apartment, and he's sitting there in a robe. And there's a giant bag of weed, Ziploc bag of weed sitting on the coffee table. And we just sit down. I didn't smoke. You know me, I've never really been a smoker. I get weird. I can't smoke weed. I'm weird enough. Like, I'm a yapper. So it's just like, you know.
Was he trying to get you to smoke weed?
No, it was just there, I promise you. And he's
Okay.
just talking, and he's not even a drinker. So he's just sitting there. I think he was eating like Katz's Deli or something like that. And you know, he's a night owl. So we've sat up until like fucking one, just chatting about like the business and my ideas for it. And he's like, "Where did you go to college?" I said, "Tufts University." I went to Tufts. He's like, "I went
You
to
went to
Tufts."
Tufts?
Yeah. You didn't know that? Yeah, I went to Tufts. And he went there too. So we bonded over that.
My brother went
And
to Tufts.
I love it. Good school. Good. He's in,
Awesome.
yeah, interesting company. Yeah. But I don't know, something about that, I think, and just the fact that I had a one syllable name, that I think it just was easy for him to remember. I think he liked the way I looked or something. I don't know. It's just like, and I was polite. And I listened, I took
Look at
direction from
that
him.
smile, B.
Yeah.
Come on. The charm is just oozing out of
But
you.
ever since then, it was like we were like that. So I had a good relationship with him, truly, until like it's good until it's not. You know what I mean? But you would get phone calls, you know, once he found out my phone number, I would get calls at 3 a.m. in the morning, 4 a.m., honestly, 5 a.m. It really would really depend on where he's at in the world. But he would come visit New York when I was here, and then you'd work all day. I'd work in the office all day. I'd be like doing what I do, and then at like 9 p.m. at night, he's like, "Okay, now we're gonna drive and we're gonna visit every single store in the New York area." That's 27 stores, people. We get in his car and we would drive all the way from the top of Manhattan all the way to the bottom, looking at every single window. And he's like, "This one needs to be clean. You need to tell the people to clean this. This mannequin over here. These graphics over here. Get this down." And I'm like, he dropped me off at home at like 4 a.m. in the morning, 5 a.m. It's ridiculous, man. Just to give you an idea of the intensity of what it is like to work there. But when you're young, you're like, "Oh, this is cool. This is fun."
Also, you feel like somebody's taking you very seriously. I think
Yeah,
that's a big part of
exactly.
his charm is he asks you your opinion about
Yes,
something.
and nobody
It's
usually
your
does.
first job. You're like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know shit about shit. Like, you want my opinion on something? Cool. Yeah. I
And
have
you know
thoughts.
what? Definitely like a verbally abusive, mentally abusive kind of relationship, I would say. Anyone in the inner circle, I think you knew this. He would buy you, once you kind of were close, he would get everybody in his inner circle, Robert Greene's 48 Laws of Power. Remember that book? Which is one of the most toxic books. A lot of rappers quote it. 50 Cent quotes it, who's probably one of the most toxic men on the face of the planet, which give you know, good barometer of that. But no, he would do that. And like, for instance, one of the laws in the 48 Laws of Power is having enemies implies your importance. Meaning he would like just like teach you to like find enemies, even if you don't necessarily want one, just to kind of like, you know what I mean? So that's kind of the work environment that we were kind of operating under. Obviously, we enjoyed each other, and I think that it wasn't even like Dove for me towards the end that got like so toxic. It was that people that would start coming in. There was one person in particular. I'm sure you remember Jan.
I don't.
Oh, you don't? Was that after you?
Potentially.
There were tons of people coming from Europe all the time, but this is what it was like, people. They would walk into stores, and one girl literally walked up to a sales associate, took a piece of paper towel, rubbed it on her face to rub her makeup off in front of customers because she just didn't like her makeup and made a girl cry. People were talking about, in particular, like brown girls, black girls not having good hair, quote unquote, and that they should not be on the sales floor if they didn't have good hair. I've seen and heard so many crazy things. And it's crazy because at the time in the early 2000s, I think that this kind of behavior, because before the advent of social media, you would see stuff like this and you would hear about it, but there was nothing to document it, right? It would happen today, but it would be totally different.
It would get shut down real
Yes,
fast.
real
Real
fast. And
fast.
I mean, I've been called slurs by people at dinners. And I kind of wish that it was like just 10 years later and I had my fucking social media account, because the way I would air you motherfuckers out, I was called let's just say a mix between N word, F word. Now mix those two words together. Yeah, I was called that. Yeah, it's crazy, crazy stuff. It's just
Which
crazy that
it's
this.
the reason why that's so cr I mean, it's crazy for so many reasons, but I feel like the general type or the if I had to describe, I was trying to explain American Apparel to my friends because all of a sudden they're seeing this on my social media and they're like, what are you talking about? And so I'm kind of giving them the lowdown. They, anecdotally remember those ads and stuff like that. What's the big deal? That bed, that was his bed, actually. It's not a random bed on a photo studio set. That was Dub's bed. So that's one thing. But if I had to describe the quintessential American Apparel girl, I remember saying this back then, is that she's ambiguously ethnic. Like you can tell that she's not white, but you can't quite make out what co amazing combination of genetics created her because it would be. Big curly hair and curves in all the right places, and
Which is
just
one of my
like
favorite things about it because it was just like so fresh at the time.
exactly. And it wasn't superposed, it wasn't
And also,
airbrushed. There was a lot about it that initially, or when I entered into it, was refreshed by because I went to school for fashion design and I had worked for a designer. Before I just decided, that is not the direction I want my career to go. I didn't feel like I fit in there. I felt like it was so vapid. There was nothing interesting about it. And while I was doing that, I also met all these supermodels, like actual supermodels who are still well-known names in the industry. And they were so insecure, so just, they, and they were these like specimens of human perfection that nobody could possibly live up to. And then you walk in a store and you're like, hey, weren't you in a legging ad, at American Apparel?
And I don't know if I would go as far as to say it's like it was, but it was groundbreaking at the time, the ads, because like you said, they weren't airbrushed. They were kind of more not pedestrian looking girls, but they were definitely like attainable people that you would know. And I don't know if I want to go as far as to say body positivity, but it was definitely like more so than what you were seeing in any kind of other fashion ads, photography, all of that. I think it definitely was like at the forefront of that body positivity movement. I think it was open the door for that, I think, right? Wouldn't you say?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because I posted those videos of me commenting on the documentary on both my TikTok and my Instagram. And on TikTok, I got a lot of girls commenting who had worked in the stores or had worked for a similar retailer, wishing they w had worked for American Apparel. But one of the things that did come up is because a lot of this clothes were, spandex and
Yeah, stretchy.
short and all of that stuff that they actually didn't feel comfortable. And so
Oh, okay.
they felt kind of left out of all of that. Now, listen, I'm taller than the average American Apparel girl. I'm a little thicker than the average American Apparel girl, but I found stuff that I was comfortable in. So
Yeah.
it wasn't necessarily, I never owned LeMay booty shorts. Let's just put it that way. I don't think that would have been practical to be merchandising in anyway. And so we didn't necessarily interface with customers while we were on the visual team. I mean, we were kind of around, but we didn't have to be that look. We didn't have to embody that look necessarily. And I don't think anyone on the visual team really did, to be honest with you. We were kind of the like misfit toys of American Apparel who all just kind of got together one day and
Yeah,
made
I mean, by
magic.
the time that I left, like I said, I was doing all of I was the visual manager for the entire Northeast, and I was overseeing the team after Ani Heat left. So I was doing that for like 6 years, I guess, or so after you left. But after a while, I did become that.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Though, like I did kind of fit that mold. Leaving American Apparel, though, was kind of like a real jolt because it was like I'd been there for so long, I had never worked really in my adult, but it was kind of the best thing ever because now I've ended up in a completely, other life is funny. Life is funny. But anyway, so you are now in North Carolina, sorry, I almost said North Carolina. You're in NorCal. Are you in San Francisco or no?
I'm further north. I'm
Okay.
actually in an area called Mount Shasta, which
Okay.
is just south of the Oregon border.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's so funny because you were like to me so East Coast, but even though you're from Evanston, right? Yeah. And then you went to school in Savannah, Georgia, SCAD. And I think we might have a friend in common. I'm not sure if you might know him. He might be Jeff Tickhouse. Do you know Jeff Tickhouse?
No.
No? Okay, he's a good friend of mine, but that SCAD is so small. I have this affinity for Savannah, even though it's like incredibly deeply racist in many areas, but really good vintage shopping.
And
So
also,
you gotta take a win is a win.
Savannah's like a weird little pocket in the South
Yeah,
because
yeah.
there's definitely a history of there being an amazing gay community down there. The
Yeah.
drag scene is 10 out of 10.
It's an art bubble.
Exactly.
But then you go to a
So,
bar and there's a Confederate flag. So I'm like,
sure, yeah.
I went there with Sherry. Do you remember Sherry from the Upper East Side?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we went to on a trip to Savannah for work. And she's black, and we're sitting in a fucking bar, and we look over and we say, "Oh my God, that is a fucking Confederate flag." But I was like, "But you know what? I gotta finish this burger though, because everything else is closed, bitch." So we sit in there, me and Sherry, and we're just looking at each other like, "Girl, if we fucking die." Sherry's from like the
Burger.
Bronx, and I'm like, if we don't make it back to New York, bitch, if I die in someone's Savannah, I swear to gods. But what a town. Let's talk more about the early 2000s because what a fucking time, man. Honestly, such a blur because that whole period of my life really was a blur. I think it's because I was just young and you drink, it's New York. I mean, it was a different New York than you probably, I don't know the last time you've been in New York, but man,
Four
these
years
kids
ago.
today. These kids today, they don't fucking understand. When Gen Z kids are like on TikTok, they're like, "How did you guys survive the first recession?" It's like, bitch, don't even ask me. You aren't built for this. Like, we're not new to this. We're true to this. We had the snack wrap menu or the dollar menu. We had the snack wrap. We were getting paid, but inflation wasn't what it is. Like, we were in the club in work clothes. People would just like, girls would go to clubs in blazers with pumps on and you were just doing that.
Not to mention, like I just remember getting
We look
to
like
an
lost boys.
age where I was like, wait, I'm paying for drinks now? Like, what is this?
Yeah,
This is
or
so
drinking Four
weird.
Locos, sneaking Four Locos into clubs. Like that's, the early 2000s was just a crazy time, man. But man, I wish I could go back just for like a little bit in that period. You know what I mean? New York was really kind of a chaotic time.
I would do it if I had the same amount of energy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Not now, but you know what I mean. But it's so funny because when we were DMing, we were talking a bit about I don't know how we started talking about like Perez Hilton and Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton, or yeah, Paris Hilton and Perez Hilton. And you were like, "Well, they're doing okay." I'm like, "We are not okay." Lindsay Lohan looks good, but I don't know how about what it took to
Everybody's
get
like,
here.
what does she do? I was like, she married a billionaire.
Yeah,
That's
like.
her se that's her beauty secret.
It's so funny
Okay.
because.
But I think that these two things overlap. Like, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a photograph of Lindsay Lohan passed out in the front seat of a Navigator
With a
wearing,
Flex Fleece hoodie, salt and pepper.
yes.
Of course, it's iconic. But she had the blonde hair.
Yeah,
So good.
and the thing about
Who
that
amongst
was
us? Who amongst us?
Listen,
Passed out in
I
his
looked
sock.
at that and go, it's a
Me.
Tuesday. What do you want?
Me.
But I think that what really it comes down to is that nobody was really batting an eyelash at how overexposed these women were.
Yes.
You
How
know, they were.
overexposed all of us were.
Yes.
I
Yes.
think that with the advent of the internet and right at the brink of social media in the way we know it now, it was just so much so often. And I think that we let people like Perez Hilton kind of navigate what this world would become. And I think that we're dealing with a lot of these things now and the repercussions and like going back and relitigating a lot of stuff, like the Pamela Anderson obsession now, where people are going back and relitigating stuff and realizing we were kind of mean to people. And it's like, yeah, we absolutely were, and all of us were a part of it. And it's not that like, I don't know, it's just weird. We just as a collectively, we all decided that Perez Hilton's sense of humor, which is incredibly evil and dark. And it's just like, why did we ever think that this was funny? But we were young, but it's just kind of crazy that
Well,
adults were like,
and if you kind of look at the trajectory for some of those women, you know, Britney's definitely not
Oh,
okay.
not okay. Yeah. We're honestly,
She
we are gonna, unfortunately, I think we're gonna see her pass in our lifetime. I'm so
Yeah.
sorry. You know,
For sure.
sucks.
There were many times I thought I would back then
Yeah.
because she was not okay, and yet everybody was still all over her. And one of the reasons why American Apparel was able to thrive in the culture that was being created is because it just didn't feel like women really had bodily autonomy. There was no conversation around that. There was no conversation around like what is appropriate and inappropriate to be a witness to.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's private sex tapes being leaked, which there was a lot of that going on in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
I remember thinking at the time, even, oh, that was orchestrated. That was like
Yeah.
they're doing because they wanted a new level of fame.
Well, we didn't have a
Then you
name for
come
it.
to,
We didn't have a
right.
name
And
for revenge porn. It didn't exist.
it didn't.
I
And
talk
it
about the
also just didn't occur to us that most women, when they're making private videos, don't do it out of wanting more fame.
Yeah. I think that something I talk about quite, I reference quite a bit on here is, you know, as you remember, I loved The Hills, still love it to this day. But The Hills actually is interesting because when people talk about Spencer Pratt, you watched it? Yeah, we watched it together probably. But Spencer Pratt, I think that whole storyline was that he created a rumor on Perez Hilton about Elsie having a sex tape, but it wasn't even real. So that's a perfect example of like someone weaponizing a young woman's sexuality against her to hurt her. Like, who cares if there's a sex tape or not? But the fact that like you innately think that that would be bad and use that to harm a young woman is just kind of insane. Because back then it was just like a joke to everybody. But looking back, that's quite dark. We're talking about like a young woman that's like 20, 21 years old, and people still kind of like, that's not a person that I would go back and relitigate, like Spencer Pratt. Like, no, he's just a dirt bag. You know what I mean? But we just like, that was entertainment back then. It's, you
Well,
know.
this is so strange, but I remember going to the Museum of Sex in New York City probably 10 years ago, if not more, and Paris Hilton's sex tape is just playing on a screen.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm watching Paris Hilton's docuseries later
Wow.
on, and she starts getting so upset when she's talking about that sex tape. She goes, you know, I was young. I had this boyfriend who pressured me into letting me film a really intimate moment between the two of us. And then all of a sudden it's out there in the world. And I felt raped. I felt like the whole world was raping me because I had no say in who was getting to watch this. And people were rating it. You know,
Yeah.
because she was going down on the guys. So they were like, okay, well, not good form, Paris. Come
Oh
on.
God.
You could.
Yeah.
And we were just like, nobody's going, this is a young woman. She doesn't want this out in the world. Her whole family is so embarrassed about this whole situation. And then, you know, come to find out later, there was so much other stuff going on with her and her family history. And she was trying to break away from their, I don't know, stronghold on her. It's just heartbreaking now to think about what we were participating in, because we were so desensitized.
Yeah.
That's really what it feels like.
Yeah. And I think also at our generation, like around that time, I remember like when I was in college and stuff, and you know, when we were working in the early workforce, like we weren't glued to our TVs as much. We were on the internet, but you wouldn't have the internet really so much. You had the internet on your phone, but it was like slow and you wouldn't use it all the time. We would like, we were, stuff was happening around us, but it felt like it was happening to us. Like, so we were easily like, oh, what, Lindsay Lohan got drunk again? Okay, well, I don't, Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like stuff was happening and we didn't.
I think that we, because we're the first generation to be on social media and to have access to the internet, we had a really interesting entree into all of that. And there was kind of this blurred reality where it was almost like if you were talking about Lindsay Lohan, you felt like you were talking about somebody you knew.
Yes. Yeah. It felt like a parasocial relationship. Yeah. Yeah. You're just like, oh, no, that's my girlfriend. Like, no, she wasn't that drunk. Like literally running away from a crashed car, like, and the paparazzi's following her, and I said, she wasn't that fucked up.
Leave her alone.
Yeah, what a fucking time.
So it was hard for us to distinguish between reality and what was going on. And also, we were in New York, so there was these weird little pockets of club life, I guess, where you could be hanging next to or around people who kind of overlapped with those people. Like, do you remember Heatherette?
Yeah.
They were at the same club I went to every Friday forever, you know, and they're like hanging out with Paris Hilton next night. So it didn't feel so far removed from what we were doing or participating in.
For sure. New York is like Disneyland now, but I won't even get into all that because that's a fucking, it's like we call it Work Island, Manhattan now. You know, I've always been a Brooklyn rat, so I won't go into Manhattan unless it's court ordered. Okay, maybe a brunch or two, but that's it. In and out. I want to go over to the bonus episode and I want to talk a bit more. And you actually, because you do the human design, and do you want to talk a little bit about that, kind of tell people, and you can tell people where to follow you, but you're going to do my chart over there, which would be interesting. I want to talk about a couple of current events. Some good news. Cole Colgan died. Love that. We made it to Friday, but he didn't. She's making a sad face. That man is a racist. He was using the N-word, hard R. He was taking photos in a that detention center. You know, the one that they call it alligator,
yes.
Albatross.
Oh,
Albatross. Oh, he had the American flag in front of the detainees and they're like sleeping on cots and he's smiling. No, he can rest in piss. Absolutely ugly. So one thing about me, I dance on graves. When it's MAGA, I dance on graves. I'm like, you can dance on graves, but not this one. This one's mine.
This one's taken. Move
this
over.
This one's taken. Absolutely. His own daughter can't stand him. Brooke Hogan. Love you, Brooke Hogan.
Mm.
Yeah. But anyways, I got off topic. Tell the people about human design and what you do, and then we're going to kind of go over the bonus episode, and don't forget to tell them where to follow you on social media.
Yes. So my social media handle is HD by Z, and I try to make it easy because my name is impossible to spell.
Yeah. It's really not. It's Z-S-U-S-Z-I. Wait.
Z-S-I.
Yeah. Z-S-I, right. Yeah. Are you more active on TikTok than you are on Instagram, or is it vice versa?
Vice versa. I think Instagram is just the OG for me. And so.
Millennial. I do love TikTok.
Yeah. So Human Design found me a little over 7 years ago. I had totally taken a turn away from fashion. I was working at a health and wellness center in New York, And somebody had come and done charts for the entire team there before I got there. And then when I came in, he was already talking to everybody about it. And so I was mesmerized. I heard everything I needed to know about myself and then some. And it's just an amazing awareness tool. I call it astrology on steroids.
Okay. Okay.
So I ended up learning the system myself, and now I use it to coach people. And it's really something that I use in my everyday life. You can use it to understand your relationships, why you chose the career path you did, all sorts of cool things. So love that you're interested in it in general, because we had, you know, it's not who I was. And to reintroduce myself to you as this kind of like new version of myself, and
well, me,
hopefully I'm a more mature version of myself.
No, we don't want to get to. We're still those kids.
Yeah.
And so you told them where to follow you. It's HD by
Z.
Z. Guys, you guys know where to find me. Go to patreon.com/thebelist to subscribe to this bonus episode and all others. We are going to talk over there. Trump has chronic venous insufficiency diagnosis.
I have some other things that people are predict. I don't know.
Ooh, oh my God. Trump predictions. Okay, guys, come over to the bonus episode. Kicking. I know, guys, when it happens, I'm telling you, you know it. When the day it happens, I don't care. Like, I have a stock of liquor in the cabinet in case it happens at like 2 a.m. and the liquor stores are closed. Like, I'm calling out of work. Don't. Anyways, guys, go over to the bonus episode. I love you. Leave a rating review. We'll talk to you on the bonus. Bye.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.